This is Anne Marie McKelvey. It's August 1st, and this is Mindfulness Coaching Call. And we are here, all three of us. Although it may be sounding like hundreds because we're going to use different voices, so it sounds like there's a lot of people. But to be totally authentic, because we are coaches, to be honest, there's three of us. Let's see. So let's, what I'd like to do is just take a moment and just kind of get settled, find our seat and let your body relax. Let our body relax. Let go of the day, almost as though just imagine the day just dripping away from us, leaving us with this precious air, this precious human body, the preciousness of life. And I'd like to dedicate our time together to all those beings, two-leggeds, three-leggeds, four-leggeds, six-leggeds, eight-leggeds, however, winged, that are suffering. And that are suffering right now in this moment. And may we take what we learned together today, the three of us, or maybe there'll be more, and imagine that what we learned today helps to alleviate their suffering, even if for just a moment, at least they get a glimmer of what it's like not to have suffering. Oh. And I actually do need to add, I need to do an addendum because it would be a remiss on my part. And I'd also like to send a lot of energy to Phil and our friends in Nova Scotia. May they heal soundly and deeply. Okay, so welcome, 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 welcome. Yeah, thank you, thank you. So it's just gonna be us, I think. So let's just play, let's see where we go. I have a couple stories I'd like to read and we can talk about them. But one of the things I was wondering most of right now is, how do you find yourself here? How did you, out of all the people that could be here, and out of all the things each of you could be doing right now, you chose to be here. How'd you choose that, Woody?
A lot because of India, to be honest. Because she reminded me. I've been so unfortunately busy moving from place to place, and one of my goals now, and I still have time, is to really make use of every resource that the school has to offer. And the greatest resource is listening to you, first Monday of every month. So this is very special for me, so that's why I'm here.
Thanks. Glad to see you. Yeah. What about you, Ms. Schmidt, aka Angie, aka India.
Yeah, whichever. I've been trying to come to these every month because I do look forward to them, and I do enjoy just seeing everyone and just participating in conversation together.
Great, good. It's good to have you here. Yeah. So I have these two stories. I'm kind of into stories these days. And, you know, coaching is oftentimes kind of about stories. You know, it's like we get the agenda from our client, but there's usually some sort of a narrative that goes, you know, like, I wanted to do this, for, you know, like since I was 6 years old. And that's a story in itself. Or I need to not do this anymore. And the voice changes, you know. And that is a story in itself. So there's lots of different narratives. Sometimes it's helpful as a coach to actually share a story. And they can be short stories. Like, actually, I have three I want to share. And they're short, but here's one. And one of my teachers many, many years ago when I was in my 20s, when I went to India, and not our India, not our Angie. She wasn't born yet.
I don't know. When was this?
It was a long time ago. It was like 1978.
I was 4 years old.
You're 4 years old. Right. So then she was. I could have gone to see you. Okay. So anyway, I was in an ashram in Pune, India. And this was a story that was actually told. It was spoken, but I'm going to be reading it. And as was the case of this particular teacher, he would say like a very, profound is not the word I want. It's very succinct kind of sacred words. He'd put them together. So this is one. Look within and see if you are whole. Scissors are like the mind. They cut, they divide. The needle is like love. It brings things together. It heals what is torn apart. Open your heart to love, and love will make you whole. And now here's the story. And one of my favorite, I love to study philosophies and religions and things. And one of my favorite, I guess you'd call it a religion, is Sufism. And partly because in another lifetime, many years ago, back in the day when I went to India, I was a weaver and a spinner and a dyer. And you can probably see my, right back there is my spinning wheel with fleece and the grease. And anyway, I loved weaving things together. There was a spiritual aspect that was so amazing. So here we go. It is reported in the life of a great Sufi mystic. Oh, and what I forgot to say was Sufis were known for being weavers. So you would go to, you know, you'd be wandering around the streets, the cobblestone streets, and there'd be these little teeny tiny rooms, but with a huge loom and this little person in the back throwing their shuttle back and forth and pulling it. And oftentimes, the legend goes that these were Sufi mystics, but they were kind of disguised as weavers. So it is reported in the life of a great Sufi mystic, Farid, that a king came to see him. The king brought a present for Farid, a beautiful pair of scissors, golden, studded with diamonds. Very valuable, very rare, something unique. He brought those scissors to present to Farid. He noticed and he touched Farid's feet and gave him the scissors. Farid took them, looked at the scissors, gave them back to the king and said, "Sir, many, many thanks for the present that you have brought. They are beautiful, but utterly useless for me. It will be better if you give me a needle. Scissors I don't need. A needle will do." The king said, "I don't understand. If you need a needle, you'll need scissors too." And Farid said, "Scissors I don't need because scissors cut things apart. A needle I need because a needle puts things together. I teach love. My whole teaching is based on love. Putting things together, teaching people communion. I need a needle so that I can put together people. The scissors are useless. They cut, they disconnect. Next time when you come, just an ordinary needle. That will be enough." When I think about coaching, I think about how we're we're seamstresses, we're tailors. You know, we pull things together, and it's the mind that cuts things. It's like scissors that cut things apart. They create judgment and fear. You know, it cuts the love. And so when I read this story, I was like, I love this. It's like, I just want to have a needle, a metaphoric needle throughout my day to day. So what comes up for you all? What do you think?
Well, it's poignant to the position and situation that I'm in right now.
And I just want to give you a heads up that this is being recorded and it will be listened
to. I understand.
I just want to say that. You can say whatever you want to, but just to know
I understand that. Okay. No, it's just the, and thank you, Anne-Marie, but I'm good. Thank you. just making decisions, kind of those midlife decisions, and I'm in a real midlife decision. I've got a lot of doorways I can go through, which is a blessing, which is great. And it just reminded me of my purpose, which is the needle. Mm-hmm. I am not the scissors. I'm the needle. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. And that just... when I was listening to the story and I actually at the same time, I saw the king and I saw him, but I also saw these doorways and I went, and a couple of the doorways just went like this and just closed and softly, mind you, but I'm like, okay, I'm the needle.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm my oldest and dearest friend. And I'm also a needle.
You're accumulating all sorts of different parts of yourself.
Yeah. So there you go.
You are your oldest and dearest friend, indeed.
Yes,
I'm glad that landed for you.
Hugely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
What about you?
Wow. Now I get to follow that. No. I mean, yeah. I definitely agree. I think love should lead, and the mind should serve love.
It's beautiful. Yeah, the mind should serve love. Yeah. You know, in coaching, oftentimes there's, in fact, the code of ethics, but also the core competencies in coaching, there's no mention of love. There's mention of awareness, of presence, but nothing about love.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that I really feel like heals, and it helps people meet their agenda, is, you know, the love between the client and the coach, and the support that the client feels. So when I read this, and that whole idea of being whole, you know, that we need that love, that wholeness to really move forward in our lives, regardless of what's going on. Regardless, you know, when there were so many fires here in April and May and part of June, and the smoke was really dense, and there were the wind storms were horrendous. It was just like, and my son and I would just really focus in on love, just love, just love. Yeah, it feels scary right now. Whoa. Just saw the flames over there. Just love. Not in the sense of feeling as though nothing's going to happen to us and being naive, you know, still preparing, still making sure we have our ready, set, go pack, you know, bag to take off if we needed to, but to be really present. And, you know, as Woody brought forward, you know, to be our oldest and dearest friends. You know, and yeah, we're afraid to be burned. We're afraid to lose our homes. We're afraid. But in that fear, there's lots of love. And as coaches, when we're working with clients, and we're going to be working with clients more and more around fires, around drought, around dust storms, around floods and hurricanes and tornadoes, you know, the catastrophic kind of natural disasters, And to be able to sit in our presence, to really sit in awareness and love our clients up, I think is so important. Sometimes it just doesn't even matter what we say because we're just beaming. Yeah. So I wanted to share that with you all. Okay, ready for another story?
Yeah, just quickly, just if I can add, Anne-Marie, to that, it's like when you're with a client, it does come down to love.
Mm-hmm.
It's love for myself as a coach. It's love for myself as loving being a coach. And then it's the connection to my client who feels comfortable enough to share
mm-hmm.
their deepest, darkest, what's going on, because they can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all feel each other's energy.
Yeah.
And that all comes down to, you're absolutely correct, love. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's what keeps us coming back, I think, ultimately. Yeah. And look, Angie, India, you are just beaming over there. It's
like, you're talking about love.
Oh, well, you'd be.
It does. I believe that it does set the space for sure. I think love is how that the safe space.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Yeah. Something happens. Something happens. So here's another little story. You know, in the Buddhist traditions, stories are a big deal. But in Christianity, stories, and Sufism, I mean, all the different philosophies and religions have stories. They have parables to learn from. So here's another one. And this is totally different than what I just shared. But I do feel this way. You know, when you look at the school, when you look at how many people want to be coaches, and how many people come to classes, and not just in our school, but in other coaching schools. There's a lot of people, but how many become coaches? How many really, really become coaches? Because in order to become a coach, you have to make a commitment, almost like being a devotee to yourself, to being a coach. And that's why oftentimes I'll share with people, and just couple minutes every morning and right before you go to bed at night, just look in the mirror at yourself and just say, I am an incredible coach. 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 So not only when somebody says, what do you do out there in the world? You don't say, well, I'm an actor, or what do you do, Angie?
Right now I am a personal trainer.
You're a personal trainer. I want to hire you. So you don't default to being a personal trainer. You remember, I am a coach. I am an incredible coach. I am a coach. And something starts shifting, you know, when we do that. But there's a lot of work that we need to do, I think, in order to be a successful coach psychologically. You know, we could have all the skills down and be really good. But if we don't have the confidence within ourselves, if we don't have the chutzpah to move forward and say, you know, I was just noticing you, this actually happened to me. I was just noticing you staring at the broccoli over here in the produce department for a long time. Are you okay? And the person says, no, my mom just died. And you say, sorry. And then you just sit with that, or you stand with that person in front of the broccoli in the produce department. Not because you're wanting another client, but because you're a coach who loves, and you're a coach who helps bridge, you know, hard, stressful events in a person's life to a place where they can accept it and move forward in other areas. So suddenly that broccoli department, broccoli section, becomes almost like an altar. It's very sacred. So again, going back to the whole place of a lot of coaches out there, a lot of credentialed coaches out there, how many are actually coaches? So when the king visited the monasteries of the great Zen master Lin Chi, he was astonished to learn that there were more than 10,000 monks living there with him. Wanting to know the exact number of monks, the king asked, "How many disciples do you have?" Lin Chi replied, "Four or five at the very most." Whew. Four or five at the very most. So that story compels me to challenge both of you to be one of those four or five. And what would you do? What would you need to do to begin to be one of those four or five today? Even though, and you might be out there in a big way already, but what's something that you've been kind of holding back on? And it's sort of, it's kind of, you know, God, maybe I should do them. But then you go, I don't think so. What's something that you've been holding back on? Both of you look.
Okay. Okay. Here's an idea I started playing with. So I'm going
okay,
to
go for it.
And also, I just want to say, I have really started implementing it into my personal training to where a lot of them call me coach now. And sometimes they'll like during the session, I want to save the last 10 minutes just for coaching. So, because it integrates nicely, right? With the whole health. So, but also beyond that, I want to do like group facilitated classes around whole health, but in a more of a coaching style. And so I'm going to do it. I wrote the list of the classes today. So, did but you, I've been holding back, but I'm going to do it. Yes.
When do you want to do it?
I'm hoping that maybe I would be ready to start with the first group in November. That gives me 3 months to get it together and get a group of guinea pigs to try it out for me.
Good. How does that feel in your body when you say that?
Good. And I feel a little bit of rumbling in my stomach.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. Absolutely. Good. Good. Okay. Cool. I have a lot to say about that, but I'm going to hold back. But I think it's awesome. I'm really excited for you. I'm excited for you. So go for it.
Yeah. Well, if you want to share feedback, I'll gladly take it.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of, you know, accumulating your hours, to, you know, make sure that you write down how many hours you're working with these people. So if it's 10 minutes, you can do 10 minutes, you know, just put that down. Those 10 minutes are going to keep adding up. But, you know, you might want to, you know, they may be paying for a half hour or an hour. You may add on, including that, the 10 minutes, have the 10 minutes and then add on 15 for free pro bono, just to help you get your hours.
Okay.
Yeah. Because then people, they'll start talking about how great you are and they'll tell their friends. And it just sort of, yeah. Good.
Thank you.
What about you, Woody?
Well, presently, I'm living at the edge of a cornfield. So for me, it's, which is a great place to be. Like I said before, I've got all these doorways that I can go through. Mm-hmm. And it's actually starting to narrow down which one I'm going to go through. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, when I took business alchemy, it's like, it's where am I going to go? Mm-hmm. And what kind of business, as far as coaching, do I want to do? And how am I going to do it? And how am I going to integrate it with acting? Mm-hmm. And the art of mindful acting, which I created in business alchemy.
Beautiful.
So it's starting to really, I've already written down the connections, people that can help me.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to be solid with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I only have a few courses left. Having this break is great. But what I can do right now is I'm going to, and I was actually talking to Angie about it, to Indy about it, is having this space between classes now, mm-hmm. I'm going to reread all the texts.
And
redo all the courses.
Yeah. Great.
Because, you know, it was fast and I was going through a lot and everything else. And now I'm just sitting at the edge of a cornfield and beautifully, and I'm just going to read. I sat out by a fire last night and I had my journal and I had my book, and I'm just going to pick up one course, read every single thing I can read, make notes, highlight it. So by the time I finish the last two courses with you, I'll have done the courses twice.
Beautiful. That's so great.
Yeah. So
you're going to learn so much that you thought that you got before.
Yeah.
More things are going to be opening up for you. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm quiet now and I'm settled and I'm still, mm-hmm. and it's just a beautiful place to be. So, and it's always good to go over things, and it's, you know, for all of us, we're all going, did you read that? Did you get that? Did you get that? In every course, right? So I am blessed to have the time to be able to do it. So that's what I'm going to do.
Beautiful. Yes. Okay, good. So you'll be one of those, what was it, 4 or 5?
Yes.
Yeah. 2 of you. I'm excited. Yes. 4 or 5. Okay. Ready for another story?
Yes.
Okay. So this is another Sufi story. And it's kind of, I think if I boiled it down, I would say, who do you most identify with? Who do you most identify with? What part of yourself do you most identify with? So a man walking through the forest saw a fox. Wait, let me start over. A man walking through the forest saw a fox that had lost its legs, and he wondered how it lived. Then he saw a tiger come up with game in its mouth. The tiger ate its fill and left the rest of the meat for the fox. The next day, God fed the fox by means of the same tiger. The man began to wonder at God's greatness and said to himself, I too shall just rest in a corner with full trust in the Lord, and he will provide me with all that I need. He did this for many, many days, but nothing happened. And he was almost at death's door when he heard a voice say, Oh, you who are in the path of error, open your eyes to the truth. Stop imitating the disabled fox and follow the example of the tiger. Isn't that great?
So good.
I love that. I love that story. Stop imitating the disabled fox and follow the example of the tiger.
Yeah, I just got goosebumps. Do you have that? Is it a book that you're reading from, or?
Yeah. So, and this is the next thing. This is one, I think, one of the best books. It's called The Spirituality of Imperfection, and it has a lot.
I need to take a photo of it.
Sure.
Got it.
Go back. Do it again, and you can get their names, the authors.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's Ernest Kurtz, KURTZ, and Catherine Ketchum, KETCH.
Yeah.
AM.
Thank you.
Sure. This is one of those books that's really fun to read, to just open it up and just, I think that there's at least one story on every page. But in the midst of it, there's also story, there's, you know, the authors are writing about different things. This is used a lot in 12-step work. And in fact, I think it's a 12-step book. Oh no, it says, this illuminating book brings together the wisdom stories of many traditions and faiths, from Hebrew prophets to Buddhist sages and Christian teachers, and from ancient Greeks to the modern insights of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, anyway, it's a great book, and it's a book I resource a lot. So when you think about, you know, who you're imitating, you know, who are you imitating these days? Are you imitating the fox? Or are you imitating the tiger? Because this is an important question right now in the world. Who are we imitating?
Want us to comment? I'm actually really trying to find my own inner lead, my own inner. And yes, that is sort of you are inspired by others and you look at how they do things and you try to, you know, see the qualities that you would like to have in whatever you do. But really trying to get away from imitating and trying to lead my own path.
And how's that working?
It's different.
It's what?
It's different. It's very different.
Yeah.
Good. It's a completely different way of being.
And how do you know when you found it?
It's just what feels right inside. So I guess intuition.
So there's a connection. The reason I ask is because I think it's so important that once we find something that works for us, to be loyal to it. You know, to enhance it, to let ourselves be surrounded by it, you know, to trust it, as opposed to jump into another thing. Yeah. Good. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thanks. What about you, Woody?
Thank you, Angie, for sharing that with us. The Fox and the Tiger is a beautiful story, a great analogy, and fits very well with my path. I look back to the successes in my life, and those successes in my life, I was the tiger. And I'm thinking about those successes now. I spent a long time being the fox, waiting. Thinking I was ready, but just waiting. Being part of the crowd. You know, that acceptance thing. That said, you reading that story really, I mean, I feel taller because I know right now I've crossed that threshold to I am the tiger. I am no longer the fox. And it feels damn good, to be honest with you.
And tell me about your body. Where does it feel good in your body when you think about that?
My shoulders, my stomach.
Good.
My feet. It's just like it was an overwhelming, actually, and I thank you for it. It was an overwhelming feeling of self-gratitude of yeah, you're here. And I didn't even actually realize it until you brought up that story, so that's what made me smile so much, because I'm like, wait a second, I'm not a fox anymore.
Right, you're the tiger. You're there.
I'm the tiger. Yeah. I gotta get the song. Where's the song?
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that we can all phase back between the fox and the tiger at certain times in our lives. Or is it just a personality, either you're a fox or you're a tiger?
I think it can be. I think it's a story, and we get to put on whatever meaning we want. But my suspicion, though, is that I think it's important to be able to ask for help just as much as it is to give help.
Yeah.
It's just as important to, you know, to be the tiger and take care of ourselves first, and then leave what's necessary for the person who's wounded somehow. But we have to take care of ourselves first. And then sometimes I think it's just so important to know how to receive. Yeah.
It's very difficult sometimes.
And it's very difficult. You know, we're not encouraged to do that in our culture. I don't think in very many cultures. No. Yeah. Yeah. So stories, narratives, you know, I love to hear our narratives from our students, unless, underlining it and highlighting it, unless it's a story that's been told so many times that it has no juice to it anymore, and it's not even believable. You know, somehow the person who's telling the story gets something out of it, or they did originally, but now they're not. They need to update themselves. They need to update the story. Update who they are. It's just like Woody, what you just said, you know, you're not the fox, you're the tiger now. So you need to update yourself in all areas of your life. You know, not just saying that, you know, on August 1st, mindfulness coaching call. Yeah. But I'm just using that word for the first time. To describe this, but I imitate in a good way, I think. There are songs that I sing that pull me into a specific state of being. There's a song that I sing, Barbara Streisand sings it, and it's in Funny Girl, it's when she's taking the tugboat out to the ship. And she's, you know, it's Don't Rain on My Parade. And I will sing that. That'll be what I sing all day. Just, you know, don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Yeah, it's like, and usually it's because I'm feeling like a fox. I'm feeling scared. I can't do it. I don't think I can. This is, you know, who do I think I am? You know, all those that kind of self-talk. And so that song pulls me. Or Frank Sinatra singing My Way. And you know, those are oldies but goodies, but they work for me. So in navigating trauma, which is happening right now, we're in our second week, and I've asked all of our students to bring forward songs that have helped them upregulate or downregulate their state of being. You know, that when they're having a difficult time, what song gets you back into balance? What song gets you into alignment? And it doesn't mean that balance and alignment is like flatlined, you know, because as we know, when Barbara Streisand is singing that song, Don't Rain on My Parade, she is not quiet and demure. You know, she's out there boogieing. And so sometimes we need that kind of energy. But, you know, so look at the songs that you're bringing forward, because those are all stories also.
And after you talk too, I was thinking there's also a difference between mindful imitation mm-hmm. and then just blind imitation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I guess when I was thinking of like imitation, I was thinking more of like just blind imitation
mm-hmm.
rather than more of a mindful imitation where you're imitating, but you're doing it mindfully. Like those are things you want to imitate.
Mm-hmm. It's like the person is more of a role model. Yeah. I mean, I've done that with, I think I have it right here, actually. Maybe not. Oh, maybe. Maybe not. It's, I don't know where it is.
You sound like Oscar the Grouch over there going through the can.
I have a bunch of pictures. side by side. Anyway, I lived in Santa Fe for probably 20 years before I fell in love with Georgia O'Keeffe. And I was just kind of not interested in her at all. You know, it's like everybody else was, so I'm not going to go that route. I'm going to be different. And then I read a book of hers, and then I started reading quotes of hers. And then I visited her house. I hung out where she lived. I really frequented a lot of the different places that she painted. And I just fell in love with the woman. So what I did was I got, it's kind of like a vision board, except it's all about Georgia. And it's a lot of pictures. And I wish I know it's in this house, it's here someplace. Anyway, it's pictures of her of all different ages in her life, and it's quotes, and they're very intimate quotes. I was very surprised at how intimate she was, because she hung out by herself a lot, and she lived in Abiquiú, New Mexico, for God's sakes. I mean, that's like out in the middle of nowhere, and there's nothing there, and except there was a church, and there was a little small tiny teeny town called Abiquiú. And she painted, and then she would go to New York City, and she would be with her husband, and she'd come back, and she would commune with life, and she was a character. One of my most favorite quotes of hers is, I've always been afraid, but I did it anyway. Really? Okay. So I'm afraid right now. I'm going to do it anyway. Georgia did it. I could do it. So when I talk about imitating somebody, it's like I think probably a better term would be I'm following in the footsteps of. And that's one of the reasons I love autobiographies and biographies so much, because they tend to tell us how people got through different aspects of their lives. And she has another one too that sometimes I also relate to, which is kind of showing my hand here, but it's, if all people were trees, I would probably like them. That's so good.
So good. Yeah, what do you like that one?
That's me. That is so me. I'm writing that down.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, in terms of stories, you can take somebody who you have a lot of admiration for. It could be anybody. And then just start finding pictures of them, finding quotes that they've said, and then print them off, cut them up, put them on. You know, this one happens to be, even though she's known for her colors, you know, are so beautiful in her paintings, but this is all black and white. And it works for me. There was a part of me that went, oh, it has to be perfect. It's like, maybe I should put it like there. And then it was just like, Emery, just get it down. Get it down. And I'm known for like bringing it with me in my car. You know, I go on a trip and I bring Georgia with me. But it's, you know, so who are you wanting to follow in their footsteps? Because do you want to follow in the footsteps of the disabled fox or the tiger that is so generous? That knows how important it is to take care of himself first, but then he also wants to take care of other people. You know, and then who would that exemplify on our planet, a two-legged? So, okay, that's all I got.
I find myself taking the place of the fox, taking on the fox's pain. Like you said, we've got to take care of ourselves first, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's imperative.
It is imperative. And it's been a mistake or of mine is not doing that. Is I'll take care of you first before I'll take care of myself, because it's easier to take care of the fox than it is you know, because that tiger may come back. But what if the tiger stops coming because all the tiger's doing is serving the fox?
The tiger's also taking care of the tiger. And the tiger, in just his actions of helping the disabled fox, also showed the man how to take care of himself.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just don't know, you know, how we live our lives stop and how they just continue and other people learn from them. There was a woman yesterday, we have a place called Galisteo Basin, and I ride my bike down to it, and it's a good bike ride. It's about 45 minutes to 50 minutes to get there, and it's all on the rail trail. And anyway, I was listening to Ma Muse. I don't know if you all know Ma Muse. They're just two women, and they do a lot of acapella, and it's very positive songs. They're just great songs. So anyway, I'm like on my bike, and I'm just having fun. I'm singing out loud. You know, I'm having a good time. There's nobody around until I sort of got this peripheral hit, and I looked over, and there was a woman who was getting ready. She was getting ready to get on her bike, and she was getting her, you know, water bottle on and everything. And she was probably about, I don't know, 25 yards away, probably más o menos. And she just had this huge grin on her face because I was really bellowing. I was just like, you know, we shall be known by the, you know, it's like, rah, rah. And she had her hands together like in a prayer position. She was just going, she was just so delighted. And that facial expression has lived with me since. And that happened about 10 o'clock. Oh no, probably about 8 o'clock yesterday morning. But there was just something about her that just, you know, my exuberance got her attention, but then her exuberance got mine. And it's like, and who knows? I mean, part of what's going on with me right now could be part of that. And then you all are just, you know, jiving it with it. You know, I mean, it's like everything starts getting juicy. So we don't know when something ends. It just keeps going. Okay.
We were talking about before, I was kind of actually thinking about this, like taking care of ourselves and taking care of others. Cause in our coaching leaders class this week, we were talking about moral leadership and how in the book we were reading, he says that suffering is a part of being a moral leader. And in our class discussion, we decided that, no, we don't think that suffering should be a part of moral leadership. And I was thinking about, like, cause in the past, it often is, like, moral leaders seem to suffer quite a bit. And I was just, I came to my own conclusion that I think it is because they were so busy taking care of everyone else, they forgot to take care of themselves. Mm. And so then they do end up suffering, but it shouldn't be that way. I mean, they should be also taking, I mean, same thing with like nursing and psychologists and a lot of caretaker type professions. They spend so much, if they're not careful, they spend so much, all of their energy taking care of others. And then a lot of times I feel like they forget to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, but we're realizing that now and that that's not healthy or good and that they have to take care of themselves to be able to take care of others. So I think it seems like we're turning a corner on that. Mm-hmm. But it almost was like the caretakers did almost suffer before.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would call that compassion fatigue. You know, just giving up too much and not giving ourselves enough. And then we become depleted. Moral Leadership by Dr. Franklin. I love that book. It's one of my favorite books. And it's interesting because it brings up a lot of discussion. Yeah. In how it's written. And things like that. But I love the historical moments that he brings forward, you know, with Martin Luther King and the things that I did not learn in school. And it's just such a small little book, but wow, it's potent.
That's what I can't remember her name, but it talks about the one leader and how she was like, she couldn't even barely afford her kids, like to feed her kids or to take care of. I can't remember who it was now.
It wasn't Rosa Parks.
No. I can't remember now.
Okay. I don't have the book in here.
She did like the farmers. You know who I'm talking about?
Right, I do. She, Do you have the book, Woody?
I thought I did, but I don't. It's in the tent. It's not here.
Okay.
Nonviolent communication, EMBR, emergent strategy. No, I don't have it.
Okay. I'll have to look for it. But indeed, you know, it's like, I think that some of us think that we have to suffer hard in order to do whatever, you know, but there is suffering. There is suffering in the world. I mean, that's sort of a kind of a given, but I think it lessens when we look at our belief systems, and the more we can really look at our belief systems and let go and challenge the belief systems, the less suffering there is. Yeah. So, okay. We have 3 more minutes till the top of the hour. This was so much fun.
Been a packed house, I'll tell you.
And what?
I said it's been a packed house. Can't get word edgewise.
No, I'm so glad that, you know, you guys got to talk at least once, you know, because there's so many other people before you and after.
Yeah. I'm going to say 2 quick things. Is that okay?
Yeah,
or did you have something you wanted to do?
Well, no, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. The quote about if all people were trees, I'd probably like them.
I'd probably like more of them, yeah.
More of them. Okay.
If people were trees, I would probably like more of them. I think that's how it is. Something like that.
Okay. because I'm not a big fan of the humans either, but I love nature and animals. And I'm actually reading this book, Holobean, and it's called The Hidden Life of Trees. It's incredible. And it talks about, and this is kind of the stuff I want to do. I want to take people into the forest. Like when I'm teaching in Stanley Park in Vancouver for acting, I bring my classes into Stanley Park. Meet my client in Stanley Park and go, where would you like to sit?
Yeah.
And we're amongst the trees. And this book, it talks about how the roots of trees are, you're talking about the needle. The roots of trees actually have electric current running through them. And when you see a dead tree, but the stump is still alive, it's alive because the trees around it are keeping it alive by feeding it. It's a whole system, and everybody, all the trees are helping the other trees. And it's like, we can learn so much from the trees. And when I do, I mean, my safest place is the forest. Mm-hmm. I will go in there especially when I'm in Vancouver, because it's the rainforest, but any tree and tree meditation. And just when you start feeling a tree, you can really focus on the tree, and you start feeling the tree move and sway with the wind, and you start feeling the energy of that tree. It's a beautiful, and my God, it's a powerful, powerful thing. So I would say, if anyone hasn't done it, hug a tree.
and lean up against it. And
feel. Yeah.
And that's when a tree is really at your back.
Yes. Yes. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
It's my favorite place.
Thank you. Thanks. I think I'm going to go up in the mountains tomorrow. Thank you.
You should.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, you two. Much love. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much needling. Much sewing.
Much sewing. Thank you, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Please keep us updated on Phil when we can contact him. Okay.
And know that link that I sent you all, you can keep adding to it. It's just not a one-time thing. So if you have something that all of a sudden you think about him, like about the hidden, like what you just shared, Woody, would be beautiful for him. About the trees and the support that he's getting from all the other trees. probably not the part about, you know, if trees were, if people were like, trees,
like no, we'll leave that part out. It's just, knowing me, I would just put that part and that's it. And Phil would go, oh, Woody.
Right, exactly. So Phil, Jodry, we're just buzzing you and Martin and Ricard.
Yeah, every day.
Every day in every way. Okay.
You're lovely.
Ditto. Takes one to blow one. Bye.
Bye.